Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Before we jump into this next episode, I want to tell you a little bit about what we got going on. If you've ever wanted to go hunting with me or the Days in the Wild crew, we are doing a raffle for a 5-day fully outfitted archery hunt. We're actually giving two of those away. It's a $40 entry. But there's only 100 entries sold. So you got a 1 in 100 chance of winning. So it's a really, really good chance to go hunting here in Arizona during the rut on archery hunt. You could actually opt to, if you have a rifle tag, it's past the draw date now, but if you have a rifle tag, you can actually opt for us to take you on the rifle hunt as well. Like I said, 1 in 100 chance. You go to my blog at johnstallone.me, and there will be a raffle section. Just go to the raffle section and purchase your ticket there. We will also be giving away a handful, I think 4 or 5, I don't remember now, but one-day coyote hunts or predator hunts. Those are it's a $400 value. We charge $400 to guide for guided-only predator hunts 1 day. And those are $30, and it's a 1 in 10 chance of winning, which is pretty darn awesome, I think. So 1 in 10 chance of winning, and you can opt to purchase some more days if you want to come out, let's say, for 3-day hunt and get one for free, basically, and purchase some other days. We'll give you a discount. So go to johnstallone.me and check out the raffle. Let's roll into this episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to talk a little bit about getting ready for elk season, the things we do to prepare for the hunt, what our scouting looks like, you know, how we're choosing the area to hunt, just all the little nuances that go into, excuse me, I got the hiccups, all the little nuances that go into doing a successful elk hunt. And I have Shannon Mobs with Angry Spike Productions on with me today, and if you haven't heard or don't know who Shannon is, he's been on the podcast a couple times, so definitely look up some of the older episodes. As a matter of fact, I'll link them in the show notes. You can just click on them from there. What's going on, Shannon?
Not much, John. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. Same shit, different day, man. Yeah. You kind of heard my little introduction when I got you on for today. This is completely off the cuff. I didn't send you any questions beforehand. Before we jump into anything that I got, why don't you give us a quick rundown about yourself and let those listeners who don't know who you are,
Yeah, I'm a co-owner of Angry Spike Productions. We have about 15 years ago, we started recording our Roosevelt elk hunting experiences. Kind of derived my own way of attacking herd bulls. Very aggressive way of calling them in. Pretty selective on the elk that we actually harvest. And from there, you know, we've just been targeting these Rosies. We've gone a little bit east. I drew a tag in Washington back in 2012. Killed a 393-inch Rocky Mountain bull using the exact same technique, so it does travel well. There is quite a bit of difference in a high altitude migrating herd versus our Roosevelts here, but you can adapt most of these techniques to anywhere you're at. So,
yeah, nice. If you guys don't know, Shannon and I we've hunted together a couple times. He came out for a coos deer here, and we hunted here, and then I went out there to hunt Rosies with him, and it was a good time, man. He knows his shit. He's a a hardcore hunter, and that's why I got him on for like the third or fourth time, at least a fourth time, I think.
Yeah,
But
like mines.
yeah.
Like mines. I tell you what, I dig that coos hunting, though. That is so much fun.
It is though, isn't it? It's freaking addicting.
It's
It's.
so hard, which is what makes it so enjoyable.
I think. Well, my card just got hit today for the rifle hunts.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. So either my daughter and my wife drew a tag, because it was a $90 charge. So as a resident, it's only $45, and I put my wife and my daughter in together, and then I also put myself and my cousin Joe in together. And if we drew, we got a late season tag, Joe and I. I put in for the rut rifle hunt to late December hunt.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that'd be pretty titties if we got that.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, my first two units I put in for were like, I got, well, you know this. You know where the big boy is?
I
My
do.
big sexy. He's that was my first choice, so
Oh, boy.
I might finally capitalize on him with a rifle
That
though.
would be sweet either way.
We'll see. He doesn't show up there until a little bit after Christmas, so
Really?
yeah. And the hunt goes all the way to the 31st, so I might just plan to be there that last 5 days, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't even know if I got the tag. I could just go all be speculations. It could be my daughter and my wife, and if that's the case, we'll be hunting up here in
Yeah, it's a
21, I
coin
think.
toss, so
Yeah, yeah.
something exciting's coming from it anyway,
Yeah,
regardless.
absolutely. Absolutely. It'll be fun.
I drew squat. I drew an over the counter.
There you go.
Yeah.
I've had a really crappy, well, I shouldn't say really crappy year, because I drew a really primos Nevada mule deer tag, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
But other than that, I didn't draw any elk tags. I didn't draw. It was just, So thank God I'm gonna be coming to Oregon and break your chops again.
That's right. Yeah, I almost prefer it this way. I know what to expect. I know where I'm gonna go, and
Yeah.
I don't have to do a whole lot of extra work, you know.
Yeah, the work's all been done.
Yeah, it is.
So, well, let me throw a couple questions at you. What are some of the things that you do throughout the season, and maybe kind of give it to me on a timeline to prepare for elk hunting season? There's a
So my preparation for elk hunting season is a year-long thing.
Right.
I've never wanted my physical ability to limit my success or my enjoyment in the hunt. So I try to stay active throughout the year, and I do that mostly by continuing to hunt other places. So, I'm just grabbing my pack and going for a walk here and there. But I don't ever want to get to the point where, I look up at a mountain and say, I just don't want to walk up that. So I do what I can to prevent that. I'm not, by no means am I going to go on a 100 mile in 3 days death hike, but
Yeah.
I will climb virtually any mountain if there's an elk, potentially an elk at the top of it. So that's the number one thing I would say. I just try to stay healthy. And then usually about this time of year, late spring, early summer, I really break out my archery equipment and I start pounding arrows and getting my setup that I'm going to be using that year. I just picked up a brand new Reckoning, Bowtech Reckoning, so I've been playing with that, getting my heavy arrow set up, shooting through it, and getting comfortable and familiar with it. And that's something that should happen at least weekly. I should, at least shoot 50 to 100 arrows a week. It almost has to be second nature when a bull's coming in. You're fighting all the emotion, and there's so many other things you got your mind on that you don't want to have to sit there and think about how am I going to make a good shot.
Yeah, for
So
sure. It's one of those things you just want to go into to autopilot and make it happen.
that's right. Your subconscious mind should be able to take over that last split second when you need to draw back and take a good shot. And these elk in this thick country, a lot of times, more often than not, they're coming right at us. So So I have a small window to shoot my animals in, small kill zone, usually a small opening in the brush. So you need to be, as accurate as you can possibly be with your equipment. So I do shoot quite frequently.
Now, let me ask you this. You just brought up something that made me think of a question. What are you practicing in the thick stuff? Like, are you trying to figure out like what your arrow does and how you can, squeeze it through holes and all that stuff, or are you just relying on the fact that you could put it where you want to put it?
Right. Now my practice is at a dot, a known yardage, and I want to be able to hit that dot on command. So when I practice, I mostly do it on a range. And then, I'll do like the Northwest Mountain Challenge, which has a bunch of trick shots and exaggerated shooting conditions, side hill or straight up and down or what might be the case or through some sort of opening. So I will exercise that a little bit, but usually when I'm just trying to work on myself, it's flat ground, it's at a dot. I don't want any other variables convincing me that that's the reason why I missed. So
Makes
yeah,
sense.
my practice is pretty much flat. I do want to know if my arrows, what type of a hole I can get them through, because every arrow flexes and bends as it's going through the air. So it's neat to see that happen, and if I can, I go on a 3D course or some sort of shoot like the Northwest Mountain Challenges, I'll get to experience that a little bit and get a little bit more confidence in it.
Yeah. See, I'm of the school of trying, like, I do the same thing. I only shoot at a dot while I'm sighting the bow in,
Yeah.
while I'm getting it dialed in. Once it's all paper tuned and everything's perfect, I switch gears completely. I start shooting at only 3D type targets or only blank face targets and trying to pick a spot. And all my shooting is in lifelike scenarios, like on my knees, on my ass, behind
Right.
rocks. Yeah, I feel for myself, and everybody's different, but I feel like for myself, if I practice that way, that automatic, going to second nature type stuff is and going to autopilot mode is it just happens, and I feel very confident and I can make things happen that way. And I feel like those years that I'm not practiced like that, I could always tell that I wasn't practiced that way.
Well, it
I mean,
makes
for
a lot of
instance,
sense. Yeah.
last year when I came on your hunt, while I was came hunting with you, the bow that I was shooting with the heavy setup and all that stuff, I really didn't shoot it all that much. I was shooting my deer rig, which was at a faster arrow, and I was shooting different broadheads and just the whole everything was different. And I made a bonehead move. I literally picked the wrong pin on my sight. I knew the distance. I ranged, I drew back, and I shot, and they shot low. And then I realized, I'm like, fuck, I just picked the wrong pin. And that crap don't really happen to me because, I mean, I shoot coyotes on the run, so it's like I'm usually very good about that. But I don't know what it was. I'm sure it was because I was just excited there was a freaking Rosie in front of me, but Corey did his job.
Yeah,
I
no,
didn't
it
do mine. Mm-hmm.
wasn't an ideal situation by no means. Where you were and where the elk was and what the elk was doing, it wasn't ideal. And yeah, you had it was a tough shot. I don't care how good you are, but you did shoot just low. But no, for me, practice is about my setup hitting right where I expect it to hit. And like I said, I'll throw in those kneeling down. I try not to do that when I'm hunting anyway. If I'm calling a bull in, I typically will stand. Most of the time, I won't try to call an elk in until I'm in an area where I can stand and get a shot within the 20 or 30 yards if you're lucky in this country,
Right.
get
Super
a
thin.
shot on them.
And which is crazy because everybody I ever spoke to about it said, be prepared for 15, 20 yard shots, 30 yard shot max. And both shot opportunities that I had were 60 yards. And
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, cool.
Well,
But
I
it's
tell you what, these elk, when you're calling them in, if you can see 60 yards, they're going to stop at 60 yards. They want to see,
right. Exactly.
their aggressor. So, you can try to manipulate that and be in an area where you can't see more than 60 yards, but just like the elk, I want to be able to see it.
Yep. Oh yeah. No, I equate that the same thing when I'm predator calling.
Yeah.
They're only going to come as far as they can,
They have to.
as far as they have to, until they expect, I'm here, I should be able to see what's calling to me.
And that's what elk do in the, against another elk. They go, they make eye contact, they size each other up, and they determine if it's a good idea to go in and brawl or not,
Right.
Well, I just always want to be outside that sight curtain and get a shot right there when he exposes himself, which, you try to make it work out just perfect. A lot of times it don't, sometimes it does.
Yeah. Since we were talking about, about it a little bit, what's your bow and arrow setup look like?
Right, so I shoot about 70 to 72 pounds. Usually I get a 70 pound limb. I max it out. Draw length is 28 and a half, so I'm usually right around that advertised 70 pound mark. I shoot a Valkyrie arrow setup with a 300 grain Jaeger broadhead.
Jesus.
And so my total arrow and broadhead setup is about 600 to 603. So I'm shooting a real heavy setup, probably not pumping it out there much more than 260 feet a second. What I've learned here shooting through this thicker cover is, it's all about that deflection. If I hit something at 3 yards, how far is my arrow going to be off target at 20?
Right.
So it's just like a train going down a tracks. The heavier it is, the less likely it is to, deflect at a greater distance. So if I can shoot and hit something accidentally, of course, you try not to, and I can still recover that animal, that's the reason why I've chosen to go this heavy setup. And it so far has proven to work. You're not going to get through a tree.
No.
Let's be honest. You're not purposely trying to shoot through garbage, but what you're doing is you're preparing for that, that mistake you make. And if I can recover one animal from that setup, it's well worth it. It's well worth the money. It's well worth the time of setting it up.
Yeah.
And as far as speed is concerned, I don't have to worry at 20 to 60 yards, these elk, 1,000 pound animal really jumping my string. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
A deer, a little different story. They're much more fast on their feet. So I probably want something a little bit faster. And when I was coos deer hunting, I shoot 150 grain Valkyrie that's pumping it out there, at 280 feet a second. So,
Right. You're only losing like 20 feet per second with 150 grains?
did I say 250?
You said 150.
150. Yeah, the 150 head, I'm shooting at about 280 or so. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so
it's not,
that's
my setups aren't,
150 grains less.
but it's not super fast. My setups aren't ever really that fast, but it feels fast compared to those heavy broadheads.
Oh, I bet, yeah. I shot a Valkyrie setup out of my Helium the other day. Not a super heavy setup. It was like 480 grains total.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was the most quiet I've ever heard a bow go off ever. It was crazy because of all that extra weight
Yeah.
on the old solo cam style.
It absorbs all that energy, yeah.
Wow, man. I mean, it was still shooting to 270,
Yeah.
which is fairly quick. That's what hell
That's
was.
plenty quick.
That's what all my bows shot at, till what? 2010 and
Yeah.
2008,
Oh,
something
yeah.
like that. Yeah, all the bows were, I mean, if you got 270, you were cooking, and that was with like a 300 and something grain arrow.
Yeah, I take accuracy over speed any day, any day.
Yeah. So, oh, well, I mean, the one thing about having speed is that if you're not sure of the distance 100%, it's much more
Right.
forgiving. Oh, I
Yeah,
got 10
there's
arrows.
less arc there. I will say this though, I shot at a coyote one time and he was mousing. He was at 50 yards. He wasn't even, he didn't even know I was there. He was looking in the ground, jumping up and down.
Yeah.
And that bow went off, and that dog turned around, saw that arrow, and dodged it. I mean, it
Yeah.
literally matrix kind of stuff going on, and that arrow went right over him. So I would say predators, I'd want to shoot as fast as I could possibly shoot. His reaction to that sound was just impressive.
Coyotes jump strings better than any animal I've ever hunted. Ever.
He didn't just jump the string,
Yeah, I know.
John.
They're
He saw the
crazy.
freaking arrow and dodged it.
Yeah, they're crazy. They do like you said, they matrix it.
Yeah, it's freaking nuts, man.
I've
I
done
haven't shot another coyote since. What's the point?
Yeah. Well, it, you know what? Believe it or not, it's harder to. I mean, of course, it's harder to kill them when you sneak up on them. But even if you haven't, slam dunk shot, it's harder to kill them when they're relaxed. Believe it or not, because they're like not really that. They're not really, when they come in alert to a call, they're focused on that. Whatever's calling to them. So they're very alert, but they're very alert in a certain direction. So it's like a misdirection. When they have all their senses about them and they're just like, doing what they're doing. Yeah, man, those things are freaking, they're fast.
Yeah, it's impressive.
So let's talk a little bit about scouting. And I know, now you've got a bunch of areas that you rotate and hunt, but I'm sure at some point before you found all those, you had a formula for scouting. And I know you guys like to look find new areas too, but
Yeah, so during season I'll always make it a point to sacrifice a few days and go find new country. I would say my hardcore scouting starts right after the season ends for the
okay.
next year. The reason why I do that is all the sign is still fresh from the bulls, be it the rubs, the wallows, and where the elk are that time of year. So I try to get out and scout as much as I can as soon as our season ends. A lot of times we got deer seasons that open up, so you're out there anyway. And
Got
I'm
it.
just always logging, either using GPS or Notepad, what I see and where I see it. And because throughout the year you're going to forget, so I keep track of all that. And then usually right now when I'm starting to get geared back up, I will revisit those spots that I either went out and found during or after season. I'll start just looking at the terrain of the country through our, e-scouting is an amazing tool we have today.
Yeah.
I do find some new ground by doing that, but I don't find a lot of good ground by doing that. What I usually do is I'll explore after season, I'll find elk, and then I will go through e-scouting and find what I'm looking for. There's like bedding areas. A lot of time in September, it's it can get upwards of 80, 85 degrees, so these elk like to be in cool places. I look for nice big deep canyons with wide bottoms to it. I know the elk like to bed in those kind of areas. Benches and flats and whatever topography I can find off of whatever application you're using for e-scouting. And I'll just keep a note of that stuff, and then when I actually get back into that area, I'll visit those spots. I'll know what I'm looking for. And I'll either confirm or deny the fact that the elk use it. And I'd say it probably shortens my learning curve of the area. You can't replace being there, but if I have kind of a pattern at which I'm going to go selectively pick apart this canyon, let's say, then I know I want to hit these bulls or these draws, and it just reduces my wasted time, I'd say.
Right. And you told me once before that you pretty much only hunt them during the rut. You don't really
Yeah, that's about
show.
all I do. I only I like I said, I try to we target the big mature bulls. I say big, it's not necessarily a horn size, it's more
But
of a
the
social
older,
status.
yeah,
Yeah.
the older, tougher
Yeah,
guys.
or one that thinks he's old and tough and has cows. So
Right.
it's really a social status that we're hunting. It could be a 5 point, medium sized 5 point, and still have that herd bull mentality and the cows to support it. So I'm going to attack him the same way I would a 300 inch Roosevelt who's 10, 12 years old. And they're going to react very similar, if not exactly the same. And what I do there is when I find their home, which is these bulls like to have during the rut, they usually shrink their area down and they'll stay pretty local so they don't venture off into other areas and potentially lose their cows. But if I charge into those areas, typically I will be met by that bull, and then that's when we're able to close a deal on them, hopefully.
So try to be a little bit more specific as to what, I mean, you mentioned you're looking for bedding cover, and can you describe to me what that looks like? 'Cause to me, it's a giant jungle,
Yeah.
and there, yes, you said, there's benches and whatnot, but what is it specifically that says to you, oh, this is a good spot that bet the elk bed in?
So if I'm looking at it on the computer, I'm looking for, so you can recognize mature tree stands, young tree stands, what we call jack firs or whatever you may refer to them. I can recognize broadleaf trees such as alders and cottonwoods and whatnot. I'm always looking for water. So a creek draw with a wide bottom will typically have a broadleaf tree, which means it chokes out the underbrush. So I will most likely have a comfortable area. And when elk bed down, at least in September, they like to see a little bit. So those more open, which is why they like the ridge tops and the flats. They like to use their eyes as well as their ears and nose. So if I can find that bottom that has that broadleaf trees, I know it's probably going to be a desirable place for animals to either, travel through or bed down and utilize. And then when I'm looking in bulls, I'm looking for, where that creek starts, where that trickle may come up out of the ground. It's typically kind of damp and cool there. Again, I should see the broadleaf trees, your alders and whatnot. And then, real steep on one side of it and whatnot. And then on the flats and knobs and stuff, you're pretty much just looking for the topography, not so much the vegetation. But so when I'm really trying to pick an area apart, the two areas I will definitely visit will be those bottoms and those bowls. And then I may come across the ridges, benches, and flats by just going from one area to another. But it's really hard to, from that distance on your computer, to identify what ridge looks good for bedding or whatnot. So.
No, but no, that was some good information. Are you looking at any statistical data from like Game and Fish or US
You
Fish or
know,
like
if
that?
I'm thinking about going to a new area, I might pull those numbers up. I don't put a lot of faith in those numbers, though. On average, what is it, 10% of the population are successful. I just don't put a lot of faith in those numbers. I don't know. I just believe that it doesn't really matter how this guy did. It matters more about what is currently there and how I'm gonna do. So I don't let things like that discourage me.
No, I hear you.
And you
I
saw
think,
it. There's people all over out here. You're never going to get away from people. So I just believe that the way we do it is a little bit different and is going to be successful on the elk that they're unsuccessful at, which is all I'm asking for.
What was I gonna? I was gonna say something. Oh, the some of the data that I find is useful. I'm not really big on harvest statistics and that kind of stuff, like success rate and whatnot. I it's not doesn't mean that doesn't mean anything to me. I shouldn't say that. I do look if I see something that has hunts that have 20% success rate, because that's what the national average is. 20% success rate. I automatically think it's a great place because,
Right.
the average guy can get it done there, then I should be able to get it done there. But anyway, the statistic that I the statistics that I like to look for are densities, population, stuff like that. That type of bull to cow ratio, I think, is another huge one.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of faith in those numbers because it's really hard for our game departments to measure that.
Yeah, I can
You
imagine.
know, they're just they're, you know, they do most of that by airplanes or helicopter flybys. And let's be honest, what percentage of the animals are you going to see out there?
It's not much.
It's a small percentage, and the ones you're going to see out there are not necessarily the ones I'm targeting anyway. Those big mature bulls just don't like to expose themselves at any time of the year. Springtime, like when their horns are still soft, you'll see them more often than not. But when they're doing their counts, it's not likely to show exactly what I'm looking for anyway. So. And I've even put trail cameras up and all that good jazz, and this country is just so hard to get pictures. They got vegetation everywhere. To get one to come my direction it's more work than I'm willing to do. So, I'm not saying it doesn't work because people get great video and pictures from that,
It's just
but I
the
just.
work doesn't outweigh the or the reward doesn't outweigh their work.
Now, a good example is a couple years ago, we had this area that I knew there were some good bulls in. We put cameras up all over it. I got zero pictures of a bull. I got pictures of cows. I got pictures of people on motorcycles. I got pictures of people hiking. I got deer. I got bear. I got all that good stuff. I never saw a single bull. And in that spot, we killed a 314-inch Roosevelt and a 275-inch Roosevelt that never showed up on any of the cameras. So,
I love that.
well, and I got one camera stolen. So I, enough of
Forget.
that.
Yeah, man. That's a podcast episode right there in
It
itself.
is by itself.
Yeah,
So
people.
what I put my faith in is what sign am I seeing? If I'm looking, if I'm driving around or walking around this time of year, I'm looking for last year's rubs or whatever sign I can see from that. Well, it tells me there's a bull in that area in September, which is all I really care about. I don't care where he winters. I don't care where he spends his springs. All I care is where he is when it's legal for me to go pursue him.
Yes, makes perfect sense. And rubs seem to be a very good indicator as to where you begin your efforts during season.
Yeah, for sure. Rubs are a bull's way of telling other bulls, hey, this is my home. He's showing off to cows. So the more rubs I see, and I can actually measure the size of the bull by its rub size. If I get a tree that the bull can't physically push over, so he's not altering that height of his rubs, I can see basically how high his horns are hitting. And I can pretty much tell you that he's a 40-inch main beam, or he's younger than that, 30, 35-inch main beam, or even bigger. Found some amazing rubs that turned into just monstrous bulls. I've never found a, and kind of what I go by is a little bull cannot make a big rub. A big bull can make a little rub, but a little bull just can't make a big one. So when I'm looking for big bulls in areas, I'm looking for big rubs. Rubs I can't reach the top of. I have to grab my bow, and hold it up above my head just to hit the highest nick. That equals big mature bulls. So that's really what I'm looking for. I do know this, that I've been telling people this long enough that people are cutting the trees down, they're painting them, they're really kind of hurting my ability to find them.
Yeah, I know. We witnessed that a couple times last year. I remember that.
Right.
It's pretty messed up that
Yeah.
guys are doing that. The other thing I noticed, one thing I noticed about Rosie's that I never witnessed. Oh, I shouldn't say never, but you hardly ever see is the making of a scrape or What were you guys were you guys calling them scrapes too? I can't remember.
Yeah, ground rubs is what
Yeah,
I call them.
ground rub. Yeah, that's what it was.
I wouldn't call it. I think deer scrape. I don't know if
Yeah,
that's what elk do, but yeah, ground. They just sit there and rake the ground, you know. A lot of those bulls that you get the really dark horns do that a lot, and they'll hit that pitchy tree, you know, that usually a conifer of some kind, and then they'll rub that ground, and that'll get that dirt stuck to their horns. So I mean, you know, it's neat to watch. You can see it on the, you know, if you're walking down a trail or something, you'll see dirt and debris flung up in the trees, and that's exactly what's happening right there. That bull is just hammering the ground, so that's something I definitely look for.
Yeah, that's huge. It usually when they're at that point when they're doing that, it seems like they're pretty
Yeah.
fired up.
Yeah. You don't see that any other time of year than September. And it's usually a mature bull doing it. I don't see a lot of younger bulls doing that. I just don't think they've figured out that yet. Or they don't have that level of aggression in them yet.
Well, actually, that's all the questions I had for you. I was going to ask you to share a story, but since I didn't prep you for it, do you have a story you want to
Well, I went hunting with this guy last year.
tell? And you
No,
freaking
I mean the well, I mean that, you know, that day you and I spent out there in the rain is a perfect example of why I don't like to be out in the rain.
Yeah.
The behavior of the animal completely changes. So, they're not near as aggressive. Those cows are on their feet moving around. You're kind of pushing them around the mountain. If it was a 80-degree day, those elk would have been bedded. We would have killed that bull in a half an hour. I guarantee it.
Yeah,
But
we should probably
because of
tell
the
this
fact that
story. So, the day before, was it the day before or the day before that? It was 2 days or prior.
I think 2 days
Yeah,
before.
two days earlier, Corey and I dropped in on this bull, and we nicknamed him Pussy because he just kept. Every time we got within 100 yards, he would take his cows and go, take his cows and go. I think, if I remember right, we spent 5 hours on that bull and put like 5 or 6 miles chasing him around that canyon, up and down, through some like freaking crazy nasty steep shit. And man, he kept switching sides too. That was the best part. So we kept going up one side and then dropping down to the bottom and crossing up over the other side. It was like, God damn, just stay friggin' still, dude. Let me shoot you. Take it like a man. And then we went after your buddy Cliff the next day, and I dropped in on him. I had a shot at his satellite bull, but it wasn't a very good shot. Otherwise, I would have killed him. I would have shot him. I just didn't. There was a little too much crap in the way. He's another one. He knew he did not want to come and did not want to come and fight. I thought for a while he probably thought we were the satellite bull that was hanging out, and then that guy started piping off. And I don't know if he thought maybe let those two idiots fuck around and I'll just hang out here on my cows.
And breed the girls, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you and I went out, or well, actually all three of us. It was oh Corey, yeah, Corey too.
Yeah, we went all in.
Yeah, we went all in. We went all in on that same pussy bowl.
Yeah. And fired him right up. It's a
Yeah.
textbook locate answer. What was he? 300, maybe 400 yards away?
Yeah, he was close.
Yeah, he wasn't that far. In one of those bowls that I was talking about, you know, fairly open in there. The downside to that is it was freaking raining. It was wet and it was loud and the wind was blowing. And that
Well,
makes those elk uncomfortable.
we only had one day, one
Yeah.
nice day. But the rest was
Yeah,
cool.
John, I'm telling you, man, what you experienced because of that shitty weather, is an abnormal situation for us. Usually when we get an answer and it's a decent day out, it hasn't been raining for a week, those elk don't get up and move around, and you're not chasing them around the mountain. It's usually he meets us before we get there because his cows are bedding, chewing their cud. They're just not willing to get up and run around the hillside like they did when it's 60 degrees and pouring down rain, or 55, whatever it was. It even got cold. It was just uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was pretty freaking miserable. I soaked through two of my rain gear. Like my boots, I'm so thankful that I had the forethought to bring in two pairs of boots with me, because I was like alternating them day out. That first day I got there was a nice day, and Corey got me on a bull. Like we were that not far from camp, and we got on a bull. I think it was a bull that you passed. You had come in. Yeah, I had him. I blew that one. That was like all on me because I pushed a little too hard ahead, and I was coming over this log, and he was standing there right there staring right at me, coming over the top of this deadfall. And I was like, fuck, I should have just waited another 5 minutes and he would have been in my lap. But I didn't think I was going to get a shot off from where I was at, so I was like, oh, I need to get over this deadfall. And so I was like, when he got me. And then after that, I went 3 days without even hearing a bugle. I mean, it was like, but then that day is the day that I shot the bull. They were fired up, man. Corey had them going all day long. We had bulls going. And again, it was the one break in the one day that we had break in the weather. So, but after that, it was pretty steady. Like we never. Even though it was rainy, and I think it was the wind more than anything, more than the rain. It was super windy, and
Which makes them nervous.
yeah, it makes them nervous. I don't know how far the bugle actually carries, because I remember one point, Corey and I were on this point, and you were, I don't know, it wasn't that far away, maybe 500 yards, 400 yards away on another point across the canyon from us, and it sounded like your bugle was like
Way, way.
I was like, if I was like, I've heard him bugle, you don't sound like that. At first I didn't even think it was you. I was like, oh, that maybe there's a little satellite bull or something. And I'm like, no, that's freaking that shit. I was glassing it up.
That water, the dripping, it just soaks up your sound, soaks it up. So it's another nice thing about a calm, dry day. It just, you can get so much farther out there.
I love those like really cold, calm, crisp mornings, man. That should freaking carry for miles.
Just rings and echoes and
There's nothing like breaking the sound of silence in the morning.
know. Waking up the birds.
Yes, that's like my favorite thing to do.
You know, it's highly unlikely we have another shitty week when you're here. I'm not saying it's not gonna happen.
No, it'll be shitty. I bring that. I will guarantee you at least 50% of the time that I am there, there'll be shitty
You're coming the best week, that last week, man. It's gonna be, we're gonna kill elk. We're gonna have chances again.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm excited. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing some knowledge with us, and we'll keep in touch here as the season progresses. We get a little bit closer.
Sounds good, John. Hey, man, you take care of yourself.
All right, will do. Thanks a lot.
All right, bud. I'll
All right,
talk to you
bye-bye.
later.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.